Welcome to the Thrive with Holistic Healing Co. podcast. I am your host, Namita Mahanama. Here, I bring you the synergistic utilization of Western and Eastern modalities to help you thrive in your wellness, to thrive in your mental health, to thrive in life, so that you can feel and be your best self in body, mind, and soul. Thank you for joining me. So, let's jump in together and thrive. So, hello and welcome to episode 35 of the Thrive with Holistic Healing Co. podcast. Today is part two of a three-part series, all on medication in the perinatal period. So that means if medication is required during pregnancy and the postpartum period, keeping in mind breastfeeding and all of the, I guess, questions that might pop up. And I've designed the series basically in terms of what are the most frequently asked questions or the most important bits of information that I feel as a pharmacist are relevant when beginning medication, if you're taking medication, if you're adding medication to the treatment as a whole. And this is particularly referring to medications for anxiety, depression, and insomnia. So when I speak into medications generally, there is another episode on the podcast series about medication and what to consider, but specifically in this instance, we're talking about medication for anxiety, depression, and insomnia during pregnancy and postpartum. So we covered various topics in the last episode. In this episode or this part, we're talking about what are the considerations of medications in pregnancy and breastfeeding. We go into the topic of HG or hyperemesis gravidarum. And although it's not specific to anxiety and depression as such, I did include it here because in terms of emotional, physical, mental, financial well-being with HG, and we'll go into it in detail, I do believe that medication is an arm of treatment for HG. And in terms of getting the right treatment and making sure your symptoms are, I guess, under control and managed, that can definitely help how your mental and emotional well-being is. So we go into that a little bit in detail, although it seems a bit counterintuitive, but I do genuinely believe it's relevant. We go into what are possible side effects of each class of medication, if a side effect is causing a problem, what should you do? What are possible drug interactions with medications for PNDA? And what are considerations with alcohol while taking antidepressants or medications during this time? What are possible food interactions? So this isn't a common one during pregnancy and the postpartum period in terms of particular classes of medication that usually are prescribed, but I do touch on that just as a, you know, I think it's a food for thought, you know, in general, to understand that that can be a factor. What happens if medications aren't working for you, if you're on medication and it's not exerting the effect that you want it to? And what happens when weaning off medication? So upon doctor's advice, what happens? What goes on when you're weaning medication, and why do we need to wean off slowly if that is something that you've been told? So that is what we'll be covering in this episode. Next episode, which is part three, we will conclude our series with some answering of other relevant questions, I feel. So let's dive straight into it. So in terms of what are the considerations of medication when we're using it in pregnancy and breastfeeding, the reason why I feel there can be a bit of hesitation or a little bit of resistance if medication has been prescribed or recommended to you during this time is obviously the feelings of risk or possible harm to your baby. Now, if you weren't pregnant or breastfeeding, that question or hesitation may not be as heightened because you're just considering yourself and your own body. But when we are talking about a baby that you're growing and you know, or a baby that you're feeding your milk, then definitely I can completely appreciate the extra question marks that come up as a result. And so it's a very natural feeling and response. I will definitely reassure you that you're not alone in your concerns. And definitely when I was working in community pharmacy, you know, anyone that was pregnant or breastfeeding, that would be their first question, whether it's antibiotics or acid reflux medication, or, you know, whatever the medication is, not specifically with anxiety and depression, that concern is always there, even paracetamol, you know. And I think that it's a beautiful question to ask. It's a beautiful thing to be feeling, because already that maternal instinct of care for someone that's outside of yourself is there. And so I always, you know, I look at that with compassion and with real heartfelt emotion, really, because it's a beautiful thing that you're concerned about what the implications are for someone else. So I think, first of all, acknowledging and normalizing any concerns that you have is very human, and absolutely that is beautiful. And I think what's also important is that information, and I say this throughout all of the episodes, is that information is the opposite of ignorance, in my opinion. It's obviously enabling you to make the best and informed decision. Having clear communication as well is so important with your prescriber, to be able to speak openly about your concerns, raise anything that you have at the time, and information is going to be key in terms of nutting out the fine details of what it is that you're concerned about. In terms of the medical profession, really the patient is always kept at the forefront, and the aim always is to, and although it may not seem like it at times, but really the key and the aim is always going to be to, whatever medication you are on, to use the lowest dose for the shortest possible time. And I feel like if we always have that at the back of our mind, that that is always going to be our aim and objective where possible. Now, gradual increases of dosage or adding separate agents, that may happen if your doctor feels like you need it, but it's not something that they will do straight away. It's not something that they would do lightly, and they're really keeping the safety of you and your baby at all times. So I really want you to know that is always what everyone's intention is to make sure that you're on the lowest dose for the shortest possible time, and that the health and safety of you and your baby is always going to be first and foremost and right at the forefront. So when we talk about information, when you do begin a new medication, it's very important to explain to your doctor, if they don't know already, is that you are pregnant, how far along into your pregnancy are you, and whether you're breastfeeding. And I feel like giving all of those detailed information is going to be very helpful in order for them to choose the safest medication for you and the appropriate dose. So crystal clear communication. When we begin medication, it's very important to get information about the medication. So there's a leaflet either in the package itself, or a pharmacist can print it out for you and go through it in detail with you. And that is called the CMI, or the consumer medicines information. And that really spells out the ins and outs, nuts and bolts of the medication. And I feel that that's a very important piece of paper or literature to have, to keep on hand in your home. Whenever there's any question that pops up, to just refer to that. And that's very, very, very informative. Now, when we're also talking about medication, I feel like the concept of ama in Ayurveda is very, very important here. And ama is this concept of an undigested or an unmetabolized substance or material that's left within your body that's not cleared appropriately. So it could be, if you're imagining cholesterol, it's this thick fatty deposit that deposits in your arteries, and it's the inability of your body to get rid of this undigested material, and it can accumulate and is the root of disease. Now, there's also emotional armor, and that is when we're carrying guilt or shame or fear, or if we're consuming foods or medicine in this instance, if we're coupling that with any side of guilt, shame, fear, you know, all of those emotions, if you think about it, that are quite constrictive in nature and not expansive. It's adding the emotional armor into our system. And so where we might harbor or hold certain doubts about the safety of medication, your doctor will prescribe a medication knowing that you're pregnant and giving you the safest possible option, because there are classes of medication that are safer than others. So when you do take medication, if it is prescribed to you, that you take it without the guilt and the shame and the fear, because we want you to take it with, you know, an open mind, an open heart, without any of that extra baggage or extra layers. We want to take it in hope, with the optimism that we will get better. And I think that that's something that's really quite important to sort of continue through your medication journey. And so when we're talking about breastfeeding and medication, anything that we consume, whether it's food or drinks or definitely medicine, it has the capacity to pass through the milk supply. And similar to medication that have different classes of safety, with breastfeeding as well, some medications are more likely to pass through milk. Other medications are less likely to pass through milk. There can be relevance to timing of when you take your medication. There can be relevance in terms of the number of times of day you're feeding. And so I think just being very transparent into the fact that you are breastfeeding with your prescriber is very important, so that the best medication can be chosen for you. Don't ever assume that the doctor knows that you're breastfeeding. Don't assume that the doctor knows that you're not breastfeeding. In the postpartum period, they may assume that you are breastfeeding when in fact you may not. And if you're not feeding, then you have a bigger range of medication that they can choose from. So just be very open and articulate about whether you are breastfeeding, whether you're not. And that can really be a very important piece in the puzzle in terms of the selection of medicine. And so in terms of the condition HG, which is hyperemesis gravidarum, so the reason why I'm bringing this up is that it's quite a severe condition, and nausea and vomiting is very common in pregnancy, with 69% of the population experiencing it. But HG is actually a severe form of nausea and vomiting, and this only affects 1.1% of women. But it can be extremely taxing emotionally, psychologically, physically, and financially when they're not able to work. So for her woman and the entire family, it has a lot of impacts there. So HG is defined with symptoms starting very early in pregnancy, usually before 16 weeks. Typically it begins or happens between the 4th and the 10th week, with most of the symptoms, most, resolved between 16 and 20 weeks. So that's not with everybody, but as a general population summary, it generally does subside. But for some women, that does happen right up until delivery. So imagining that as an ongoing symptom can really be quite plaguing to how you're feeling. So HG is characterized by the inability to eat and or drink normally. It can limit your daily activities, and there may be signs of dehydration and or electrolyte imbalances. So women usually are screened with the EPDS, so the questionnaire, to really see where your mental health is tracking, and looking at your puke score. So it's a particular grade of measurement to measure how many times you're vomiting in the day and the severity and the impact that it has on your day-to-day basis. So medications can be prescribed for HG. And so whilst I'm not going to go into all of the medications and the dosages that are available, there's quite a number of medications to choose from. So first line all the way through to third line, and really trying to get the optimum dosage to control the symptoms is best. So a lot of hesitation comes around the safety of medication when you're pregnant. And so a lot of women may not take their medication to stop the nausea and vomiting. However, there are lots of complications if we aren't treating, if we're not managing the symptoms well. So from the New South Wales Health Guidelines, I'm just going to list out all of the possible complications if we're not going to be managing our symptoms very well. And that is malnutrition and loss of muscle mass, hyponatremia and hyperkalemia. So a real electrolyte imbalance, venous thromboembolism, abnormal thyroid and liver function, placental dysfunction, and a whole host of things that can happen as a result, dehydration and kidney failure, hemorrhoids, dental enamel erosion, an adverse impact on mental health, the family unit, the ability to perform usual duties and paid work. So it's because of all of these reasons that I feel that we need to make sure that we do take our medication for HG so that you can actually feel better within yourself. The actual physical complications of vomiting and nausea can have an impact on the baby as well. So really, the risk of the medication, it has to be a delicate balance between the risk benefit ratio. And so to be able to treat HG well, knowing full well that if we're not going to be managing HG, that we can affect our mental health, and there can be severe anxiety and depression, and perhaps even a resentment, not connection to the baby, and the whole host of other physical complications that can happen. My point here really is, I'm going in circles, but my point here is that if you're having HG and you're feeling like perhaps the medication, there's risk of taking medication to the safety of your baby, I would say that not treating HG and not managing your symptoms can also have consequences as well. So it's a delicate balance. We want to try, if we can, where we can, to have the lowest dose of medication to give you as best symptom relief as possible so that you can have a good, beautiful, wonderful pregnancy, and that it doesn't have all of those physical aspects and the emotional impacts and implications that it has. So I really know that looking after how you're feeling with your nausea and vomiting is going to be so incredibly important to how you feel emotionally. And this is another aspect where just alleviating your concerns. If you're on medication, ask the question to your doctor and pharmacist, well, what about this medication? You know, the first line of therapy is ginger. Well, the risk obviously with that is going to be far less than some of the other medications that are on board. So we'll always start with that first and gradually increase. But ask the question, speak with your pharmacist in depth about whatever it is that you've been prescribed and your doctor, and really find the specific information that you need rather than carrying that guilt or uncertainty or not treating your condition, which can make you feel worse in the long run and have other complications. Anyway, that's really my whole point on that particular topic. So when we're talking about medication for anxiety, insomnia, and depression, what are the side effects? So each class of medication works in a different way, pharmacologically speaking. And so therefore there's going to be different side effects that happen based on what receptors are involved and what neurotransmitters are going to be upregulated, downregulated, or changed. So, you know, I'm not going to go into detail of every single side effect of every single medication, but just as a general rule. So just as a general indication to give some kind of idea, for anxiety medication, side effects can be drowsiness, dry mouth, lightheadedness, disorientation, or effects on vision. Now, all of the side effects can range from very mild to very severe. Again, it's an individual case-by-case scenario and situation, and how much it impacts you and your daily life is going to be what is relevant here. In terms of medication for depression, some of the common side effects can be nausea, diarrhea, insomnia, drowsiness, dry mouth, dizziness, headache, anxiety, sexual dysfunction, blurred vision, constipation, loss of libido, to name just a few. And then medication for insomnia, there can be impaired alertness the next morning, like a heavy head in the morning, drowsiness, sleepwalking, dry mouth, and taste disturbance, to name a few. So what I would generally say, my advice to you is, if you're beginning medication or you're starting something new, it's really important to find out, well, what are the side effects? How long do they last for? What do you do if they do come up? So I feel like those are very important questions to know before you start taking a medication. And also, if your family around you can find out too and understand this, then they can best support you if you do get a side effect. Speaking to a pharmacist, getting that CMI is going to be so incredibly beneficial, keeping it with you, keeping it in your bag, keeping it with you at home. You can take pictures of it on your phone. You can make copies of it if you want the physical hard copy. Every time you get a packet, you can keep the hard copy that comes from outside the box. So there's lots of solutions to having it on hand, but information is going to be key. So some side effects can be very short-lived and they might just resolve, you know, after a few days of being on it. So for example, drowsiness. The first few days, you know, maybe a week, you might feel a bit more tired than normal. And as your body recalibrates to this medication in your body, it can reach equilibrium or some kind of homeostasis or you know, it'll just even out. Some side effects can actually be reduced if you have food with it. So for example, nausea or an upset stomach. If you have it after a meal, you might find that side effect, oh, it's actually a little bit less. Some side effects can be long lasting, but they don't cause too much trouble in your day. So dryness of the mouth, for example, it might be a particular issue, say if you're public speaking. So that could be something, but on a general basis, it may not be troubling you too much. But some side effects are really important for your family to know. So for example, suicidal ideations, they may increase with certain classes of medication and certain types of medication, that it's important to know that yourself, if you're having intrusive thoughts that are coming that you weren't having before you started the medication, well, then that should be a red flag. Even if you were to articulate those to the people around you, your loved ones, and for them to know, they can at least know what to do in that situation and where to go for help. And in that instance, it's so important to have crystal clear communication with your prescriber, really, to pick up the phone and say, I need an urgent appointment now. You know, it's going to be very, very important. So knowing what the side effects can be, knowing what you can do maybe to minimize them, if that is possible, is going to be really important information. And knowing how long they're going to last for, if you know that it's only going to last for a few days, I think that's important to know, because if you're feeling drowsy and you're thinking, oh gosh, how am I going to stay? How can I function? How can I look after my children? But I'm feeling this way, knowing, oh, okay, look, it's actually just short-lived. I'm just going to ride it through. I feel like that gives managed expectations about what might happen. So I hope that makes sense. So what do you do if the side effects are actually really causing you a problem? So if, for example, they're not getting better, they're not subsiding, they're getting worse, perhaps if you've tried certain strategies, you know, chat to your pharmacist, you know, ring them or go visit them and ask what are certain strategies. So for example, postural hypertension or hypertension, so when you're sitting and then you stand up suddenly and you suddenly start feeling dizzy or lightheaded, that can be minimized by just getting up more slowly, you know, taking that extra time instead of going from lying down to standing straight away. Put your legs on the side of the bed, stay there for a couple of minutes, gradually, slowly get up whilst maybe, you know, keeping close to your side table or something to hold on to in case you do feel dizzy. Hopefully in time that will get better, but knowing certain strategies can be, you know, more safety related and also can help you adjust while your body is adjusting to the medication. But if you're finding that no matter what you're trying, you've implemented all of the strategies, it's an ongoing problem, it's really affecting your quality of life, then chat to your doctor. Definitely, definitely do not stop medication on your own accord. Okay, if you feel like, oh, this is unbearable, before you stop medication, you need to chat with your doctor. Now, why? Why is it important? Because you don't want to get any of the withdrawal side effects, or, you know, you can get abrupt reactions from your body suddenly not having this medicine or substance in your body. And so it can be quite dangerous. So I would never advise that to happen. And often a lot of medication you need to slowly wean down. It's not a matter of abruptly stopping. You have to do it over a course of a, you know, a certain time period. And so it's really important not to stop taking it. And chatting with your doctor, having that open communication, will allow you and allow them to make a group decision about what is going to be best for you moving forward. Know that there are strategies you can possibly make for some. If you have tried them and they're not helping, then there's solutions. You're not going to be stuck feeling like this forever. This is where it's an open dialogue. It's clear communication that's really going to help you to find that best treatment option for you. It could be that that class of medication just is not the right fit for you. And that's okay, because everyone responds differently. Whereas even from the same class of medication, another agent might work perfectly without the side effects, and it might work faster. We just don't know. It's trial and error. And that is the beauty of this science. It's also the frustrating part of this science, because, you know, there's no way that anyone can predict how you're going to react or respond, but clear communication is the key in, through, and out of this situation.
Sorry to interrupt your Thrive podcast. I just wanted to hop on quickly to talk about my holistichealingco.com platform. I have created a website with blogs, links to videos on YouTube, all of the podcast episodes and show notes, as well as a shop to purchase my books, guided meditations, and other products. It continues to grow and evolve, containing information from a pharmacist perspective, as well as from an Eastern Ayurveda perspective. Jump on, and I hope you find some resources to help you thrive. Now, back to the episode.
Okay, so moving to possible drug interactions with medication. So when we're looking at anxiety, depression, and insomnia. So there is a lot of classes of medication. They can all interact with medication that are also on prescription, that are over the counter, and also herbal supplements. Now, it's important to know that in the forefront as well. So before you start any medication, you know, I think you need to know that they can interact. And so always ask the question, always ask a pharmacist before you try anything over the counter. Before you're prescribed a medication, make sure that doctor knows what else you're taking at the beginning, so that they can make a decision about, oh, okay, I should probably not give you that medication. Or they might say, yes, this is your prescription medication, but don't take XYZ while you're on it. Helpful information when you're beginning medication. But my advice to you is always to check with your pharmacist first. If it's a phone call, if you go and visit them, ask before you take it. Even if it's innocuous as Panadol, honestly, like, I think it's always best to check first, ask the question. It's going to be a safer option than guessing. It's, you know, your health, it's your safety, your liver, your organs, everything is going to be affected internally. So do keep that in mind. And when we're talking about natural health supplements, a lot of it, I mean, yes, it's plant-based and it is from naturally derived sources, but that does not mean that it is entirely safe or that it doesn't interact. There are so many medications that can interact. So fish oil, for example, it can increase the bleeding time. So before surgery, or if you've had an injury or things like that, that keeping that in mind, St. John's wort is a natural health supplement for mood, but it can interact with various prescription medications. So the pill, it can actually reduce how effective the pill is. And so if you didn't know that, if you took it whilst taking the pill, I just think it's that clear communication again. So speaking to your naturopath and telling them all the prescription medication you're taking, asking the pharmacist before you take it is very important. And St. John's wort with antidepressants, I mean, the issue there is really if your antidepressant isn't working, not to select St. John's wort off the shelf because you feel like you want to try something else or something extra. It can actually really interact with so many different antidepressants. And so it's important not to do that. If your medication you're taking is not working, you need to chat with your doctor first and really understand, well, what's going on here? Is it the dosage? Is it not the right agent? Have we not allowed enough time? But not to self-select anything over the counter. And really, if you're taking anything from the natural health shelf and you're taking other medication, it's so important to just really speak with the pharmacist and the naturopath really to work out whether it's safe or not to do that. And also with antidepressants, really, we're looking at cold and flu medication, the nighttime tablets in particular, but really, you know, the actual stimulant that unblocks the nose, it can be interacting with a lot of medication. Some antihistamines can definitely be a concern, and pain medication. So things that we often feel are fine. Yes, I take it all the time, but you know, you really need to check whether it's safe to use whilst taking another prescription medicine. So yes, I my mantra really is, if in doubt, check it out. So, you know, you have to ask the question. It's not worth risking it. And really, if we're also thinking about our liver and the extra stress and strain that it's going under, that's something to consider as well. It's, you know, you're adding so many different agents into our system. So yeah, keeping that in mind when we're talking about anxiety medication. So some cold and flu medicines and stimulants can really interfere with that. Insomnia medications, again, some cold and flu medicines, over-the-counter sleep medicines. You would never combine a prescription one with over-the-counter sleep medicines, and some antihistamines as well. Depression medications can interfere or interact with St. John's wort, some cold and flu tablets, and some antihistamines as a general rule, but always find out first. So what are the considerations with alcohol when we're taking antidepressants and medications? So my points here are multifactorial. So the first one is that alcohol in itself can act as a depressant. So in itself, it can affect mood. It can also precipitate anxiety in some people. And it may not happen that night, it might happen the next day or the following day. So it can certainly impact mood. Now, if you're taking treatment or having treatment for depression and you're also having alcohol on a regular basis and you're still feeling like your mood is low and you know, you're feeling depressed, then it can be very hard to know, is it the alcohol that's causing that by being a depressant, or is it actually that the treatment isn't working? So I feel like it kind of muddies the water a little bit there. The second one is that alcohol can potentiate the drowsiness of various medications. So if what you're taking is making you drowsy and you're drinking alcohol, it can make it really dangerous, and not just at the time, but also the following day. So if you're driving, especially small children, and you're not, you know, able to focus and have that attention, it can be very, very dangerous. My other concern would be with respiratory depression. So if you're so sedated, if it causes so much sedation that it can impact your breathing. And so these are very serious and dangerous consequences that having a wine, you might think, oh, it's not going to do much harm. It's a foreign agent that your body needs to clear. It's having an impact with the medication. And so that's where, you know, I just feel like it's such a serious topic or concept. The other factor to consider is the liver and how many things now it has to clear and filter through, because it removes anything that it sees as foreign. And so alcohol is going to be another foreign agent that it has to work through. So those are the main reasons. So my main point to this would be that when you're starting medication, I genuinely feel like it would be a good idea to not dabble with alcohol, not stop start, not binge drink, not do heavy drinking. And if it's part of a bigger piece of the puzzle and that's part of your treatment, then obviously your doctor will speak into that, and it may require a gradual reduction in your alcohol consumption, looking after the mood and in together, hand in hand, the treatment of you as a whole person can happen, because alcohol can be a factor in how you're feeling. So if you're not in the category where it is part of your solution in general, I would say it's best not to drink until your medication has stabilized, your dosage has stabilized, you can ascertain how you're feeling, your body has come into some kind of equilibrium or balance from being on the medication. And so that can definitely help you to know what's happening. How's your body responding? What are the side effects? And we're kind of eliminating that question mark or factor of alcohol away from the whole situation. Once you're stabilized, your symptoms have improved, you're feeling better, then, you know, again, chat with your doctor first about alcohol in your unique circumstance. But generally with medication, I would always recommend really going low and slow, not binge drinking, having, you know, sticking to the NHMRC guidelines of alcohol, keeping it well within the safe range, and to really observe how it's affecting you and how you're feeling. So even when your dose has stabilized, if you're, say you're having a glass of wine, how do you feel that night? Are you so sedated that, you know, you're not able to function? You need to be safe. The next morning, do you still feel like you're heavy-headed? Is it impacting your ability to get through the day? Is it impacting your ability to operate machinery and drive? You know, they're very, very practical and important considerations to make. And then to observe how you're feeling in terms of your symptoms, you know, is your anxiety precipitating? You know, what sort of quantity is okay? And if it is sort of delaying or impairing your treatment and how you're feeling as a whole, then I would certainly skip it out and see, you know, until you have stabilized, until you add that factor in, because it does. Alcohol, it's so social and so socially accepted, and yet there are so many rippling consequences. And when we're starting medication and trying to improve the way we feel so that we can thrive, then we don't want this extra variable just complicating it a little bit. Now, in terms of food interactions, now there's just one class of medication that can interact with food, and typically it's not prescribed during pregnancy or postpartum because there are much safer agents that doctors would typically end first. But there's a particular class of medicine called the monoamine oxidase inhibitors, and they can interact with foods that contain tyramine. So, you know, lots of different foods contain tyramine, and there's a whole list of foods that you should avoid because it can interfere in terms of how it works and side effects. So that's definitely more a food for thought, literally. But, you know, I would check with your specific medication just to check that there's no interference with any food so that that is ruled out. You can rest easy, you can be rest assured that it's going to be okay. Typically, if you're on that class of medication, you'll be told, because, you know, it kind of stands out. It's not as commonly used as some of the other classes of medication. So typically that will stand out, and you will most likely be counseled very, very well by your amazing pharmacist anyway. Now, what happens if your medications don't work for you? So say you have persisted in those time frames that we spoke about. So anywhere from 1 to 3 weeks to start working, 4 to 6 weeks to see most of the improvement, and 6 to 8 weeks to see the maximum improvement in medication. Okay, so that's when we're talking about depression, anxiety, depending on what they prescribe. Insomnia, it's not going to be that long. So depression medication is going to be those time frames that I just said. So say you have persisted, you have, you know, done what you've needed to do. What do you do? So like I've said, crystal clear communication is key, and it's about talking to your doctor about how you're feeling, what's going on, what the symptoms are, you know, measuring them to be able to gauge how it's working in your system. Now the doctor then will have lots of things to think about. They might decide to increase the dose. They might decide to keep that dose but add another agent that works in a slightly different way. They might actually recommend that we slowly wean you off that particular medication and then trial another one. So start at a low dose of another medication. So it depends. There are so many, you know, different options of what might happen. I can't explain this on a podcast, but there's certain thought processes that will happen. There's so many different directions that your doctor would do. And that's really my point here, is that if medication is not working for you, do not despair. Don't think that nothing will ever work for you. I want you to not feel like, oh, this hasn't worked, okay, I'm doomed. No, it just means that that particular agent, whether it's that dose, whether it's that particular class, whether, you know, there's tweaking, it can be tweaked. And I want you to rest easy, or be rest assured that there are options and that you're not going to be stuck like this forever. It might take time, and it may take time. And I think that's also managed expectations, to be clear about that it might be a matter of finding the right key for your lock. Okay, so it is that unique situation. So we just hang in there. Don't ever stop medication on your own. Don't ever take matters into your own hands. Contact your prescriber, meet with them, discuss what can be done, and have an open dialogue and work out the best option. But don't ever stop on your own, and don't give up hope. There are so many options and solutions. I really want you to know that. So what happens when you're weaning off medication? Now, this is upon doctor's advice, and this could happen if, say, the agent doesn't work and you need to slowly wean off, or it could be that, you know, you
You've had your treatment, you've reached equilibrium, you've maintained health and vitality, and you feel like now is the time that you can come off. Now, this only is to be done on doctor's advice. Now, I've too often seen people that feel amazing and then they stop medication and then they go back on because they, you know, aren't feeling very well. And then they stop, start. That is not how treatment like this works. And if you think almost like a band-aid, if you're pulling off a band-aid, putting it on, pulling it off, putting it on, every time you're pulling it off, it needs to, you know, you're kind of disrupting that wound healing. Every time that you have a relapse, you need to stay on that medication to maintain some kind of equilibrium and balance and then slowly wean off. So the first relapse may be X amount of time, typically 6 months. The second time could be 6 to 12 months. The next time a bit longer. Sometimes it could be an indefinite period, but this genuinely, this stop, start, that's not something for you to decide as a patient or as a family member. It is a health care team decision. And if you feel like you're ready to wean off medication, then have that conversation with your prescriber. If your prescriber is suggesting that you do wean, or that you need to wean to start another medication, what's really important to note is that you don't just stop suddenly, so you can get withdrawal symptoms. And I've said this many times on this episode already. There can be all sorts of things, you know, sweating, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, chills, shaking. I mean, you name it. There could be so many symptoms that can happen. What's also very, very important to note is that if you do need to change your medication, then they often can be, you know, that you might need a washout period, which means that you need a length of time where you don't have medication and then you slowly are going to add medication. There could be a crossover process where you're slowly coming off one, you're slowly increasing the other, and they, you know, it's a very complicated science because there's so many different medication classes, and that's for the expert physicians and doctors to recommend for you and give you the best advice. There's lots of volumes of therapeutic guidelines to help really make the best decision for you. But the most important thing that I want you to know is that medicine ideally should be weaned slowly, and that's so that your body doesn't go into shock. It's so your body can readjust, recalibrate. And to be so kind to yourself when that's happening, it is, you know, your body is going to be readjusting. And so I remember when I had medication the second time and I had recovered and I was well and I was slowly weaning, my doctor actually had said to be so kind and gentle to myself, treat myself as if I was healing from like a leg injury, you know, be really gentle, order takeaway, you know, outsource whatever I needed to, put the TV on more. Those were her exact words, you know, in that you just need to look after yourself as if you're recovering from any kind of surgery or an injury. Be kind and gentle to yourself. Don't push yourself. You know, it's not the time to be overcommitting with all sorts of commitments in life. Just take it easy. Give yourself some grace and some time and some space to be able to do this. And listen to your body. Listen to your body and be open with your partner. There was a statistic in a PwC report that had stated that women that had postnatal depression, 86% of those were married. And this is in when they had children less than two. 86% of those were married, but as time went on, that percentage reduced. Now, it didn't articulate what percentage it reduced to, but I'm well aware of the impacts of this whole situation on relationships and the strain and the stress and the impacts that it has socially, emotionally, physically, financially is something to really keep in mind. So I see you, I hear you, I feel you. And, you know, I would just say that if you're in the capacity to be open and clear with your partner, how amazing that is, and how I want you to lean into that and just let them help you through this and carry your hand. And, you know, if you're a partner listening to this, just, I know it's hard, I know it is, but to have some grace and some compassion that
you know, they will get through this. They just need some extra support. And I guess life isn't always rainbows and butterflies. And sometimes it's a whole host of, if you could look outside, it's gray and rainy and miserable. Sometimes it's like that. And, it, you know, it's like a season and we weather the storm and we walk through the other side. And yeah, this is another time where we may well need just that extra support. So yes, that concludes really what I wanted to cover today. And I hope that it's answered some of your questions. I mean, a lot of those were very general information, very specific requests for your particular medication. Absolutely pick up, you know, speak to your pharmacist, pick up the phone, go visit them, and really find out as much as you can. Information is going to be key in terms of being able to be liberated. And yeah, I'm just very, very much a fan of information. So next week we'll go through some more topics, but I really hope that you've got a lot from today. And until next time, keep well, keep safe, and I'll see you soon. Bye. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you've enjoyed this podcast, it would be so amazing if you could leave a review, subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss a thing, share this resource and my Holistic Healing Co. website, where you will find all of the episodes and show notes, as well as share my social media to your friends and to all those who would benefit from its content. I hope you have received a beautiful takeaway to help you thrive, and I look so forward to joining you again next week.